Chris Hansen. He's got 22, a new career high.
He'll have to shoot from wide out now. It's in the hands of Worthington.
On the buzzer, Mark Worthington. He's again.
Knock, knock. Who's there? It's the Has Been Hoops podcast. And there's been a bit that's happened. There's been an NBL champion crowned. There's been a start of the New Zealand NBL season. The NBA keeps rocking on. And I feel like it's only relevant that we introduce my co-host, my mate and owner of the Taranaki Airs. Chris, how are we, mate? Tell us about what is happening in the world of the Airs, even though I know, because you know that I'm following you very keenly. But how's the first 2 weeks going for you?
Yeah, no, we're 1-1. We're learning lots. We won our first game against the Manawatu Jets, close game. And I think anyone who knows the NZ NBL knows that Auckland are, you know, Cam Glidden, Ruben Tarangi, Rob Lowe, Tom Vidanovich, although he was out, Corey Webster, who shot the ball really well against us. Yeah, the Australian NBL fans know that that's a good team anywhere. So, no, we got up 10 in the fourth quarter. We didn't quite get it done, but a really good lesson and a good game for us. The second one, so we come home and I jump on a plane Thursday. I go across to New Plymouth and watch our first home game next Saturday night. So it's exciting. It's fun watching the games. I can't help myself but take notes just in case Sammy ever asks, but I keep them and I delete them and then I shut up.
Well, full disclosure, I've watched more New Zealand NBL in the first two rounds than I've ever watched in my entire life. And I must admit, I'm enjoying it. Speak to us, Sam Froelings, obviously had a great start to the season for him personally. Big to big, what have you seen his game so far?
Just fitting in, the thing that I've been really, really happy with, and I think I've mentioned on this pod that the thing that we promised Sam was we're going to allow him to expand his game, that we know that he could go down low and find his buckets and do what he does and be an MVP candidate in the end at NBL. But, you know, he knocked down his first two threes, and I, you know what, I was probably happiest with the one he took in the fourth quarter and missed because he took it. And you know, the deal with Sam Froelings, we're talking, and then with Sam McKinnon allowing this is that Sam's still going to have to put in the work. So he's going to shoot the three a lot at practice. He's going to get his reps in while he's over there in New Zealand. And we expect Sam to shoot the ball more often and more consistently from the three and add that element to his game. So he'll still find him inside a lot. He's going to rebound great. He's going to be one of, if not our best player over the course of the season. But my hope is that we can assist him taking the next step. And so far he's shown a willingness to shoot it. I hope he continues to look even more.
Lastly, when can us Airs fans expect Flynn Cameron to jump into the group and your first home games this week, and who is it against?
Yeah, he'll play in our first home game against the Fire. That's their first year in the competition. They had a really good opening win in their first round. But with anyone, I think it's one thing being an owner and you've always got to remind yourself, and I hope that I do a good job of it, of what it's like to be a player and what any player needs at the end of a season. And we know that Flynn needs some time after an emotional series and season like he's just been through with United now. His body may not need it, but his mind certainly would. So Flynn's gone home to the Gold Coast. Cheers to anyone who can hear that. Gone home to the Gold Coast, see his family over the weekend. He'll arrive in New Plymouth on Monday and he'll be suiting up for our first home game.
Just out of curiosity, what's it like for you now being an owner of a team and the emotions attached to it versus a coach and or a player?
It's almost like owning a racehorse, except I've got a little bit more to do with the breeding. you know, it's yeah, you turn. I've owned racehorses over the years, and you turn up, and absolutely everything is out of my control, and you cross your fingers and you hope and you're emotionally attached. I suppose with this one, I get a little bit of a say in the composition of the team. But at the same time, we give Sam full rein and we let him drive. So while there was some assistance in putting the roster together, we sit back just like I'd be going to the races. I'm emotionally invested, clearly. Ask me in a month, depending on how we're going. There's always going to be some speed humps, and you know, I like I said, I keep notes. I've always going to have a basketball opinion. It's whether or not I'm asked to share that, and I don't need to. But I'm learning about it. I'm not quite sure yet, but it's fun.
I'll pull back the curtain a little bit because I believe the first game, well, the rapid lead, and I must admit, I love the innovation of the New Zealand NBL with the different tweaks that they've done. So it was a sad day at about 1:06 p.m., I think, my time. I think the rapid lead started at 1:30. The main game started at 2:30. And I just sent you a simple text message that said, up the airs, let's go. And your response was
fucking nervous.
So fucking excited, interested, nervous, fascinated, hopeful, scared we fucked up, etc. Main TV going on in the pub in 20 minutes. Can't wait. And I think for me, obviously we text a fair bit, we chat a little bit. And when I got that message through to you, and I'll just tell you how I felt about it, I felt every part of invested into this than what you are emotionally, and probably all those same feelings as what I was having at the time, knowing what this venture was going to be like for you. Now, obviously, you're the one that's put a lot more capital into this, making this a reality. But as a mate, I just wanted to say everything that you wrote down to me in that text message is probably how I felt, and hence the investment into the airs and how I feel right now. We've spoken a fair bit about the airs, but
before we go and before we move on, you talk about that emotional attachment, and let me pick at the thread a little bit more. And if anyone who listens to this has followed my socials over the last few months and probably in the last few days, it's kind of one thing because I am emotionally invested and financially invested now. But you hit COVID and you think, you know, we all talk a lot and we always think we can do things better. And I sort of wanted to put myself in a position to see if I was full of shit or not and whether or not I could. So the airs is certainly the first part of that. Now, the Tauihi in the Women's National Basketball League, if anyone's followed that, you know, I was on record of, you know, recently of saying I want a WNBL team. I guess all I can say is Basketball Australia, difficult to deal with what's going on in the WNBL, but I've always wanted to invest as significantly in the women's game as what I do in the men's. So for anyone who has, and I would thank anyone who has followed the New Zealand men's team, the Taranaki, as so far, or the league as a whole. Just there was an announcement came out over the last few days that the Tauihi, the Women's National Basketball League, has doubled its player salaries. It's shortened its season. It's moved its season. Every game's on television. And there will be, for the first time in the history of the league, international expansion. So there will be teams playing in the New Zealand National Basketball League in 2025 in the women's side that are not based in Australia. So watch this space. We've been following it very closely, and yeah, there might be some more to say here in a few weeks' time.
Just for clarity, you're saying that there is teams from the WNBL going to the New Zealand NBL, or there's teams from the New Zealand, the New Zealand NBL is expanding outside of New Zealand for the first time. That's what you're saying.
So the simplest way is to look at the NBL here in Australia, and look at what the New Zealand Breakers are in our Australian National Basketball League.
Yep.
They're a New Zealand-based team in the Australian National Basketball League. There will be international teams playing in the New Zealand Women's National Basketball League from 2025.
Awesome. Hey, guess what, Chris? We've got an NBL champion. I thought I'd just skip straight over to what we've just witnessed over the last couple of weeks, which is the Tassie Jack Jumpers getting the job done. We did a podcast that will never see the light of day because our connection issues were horrendous beyond belief. And
it went up.
Did it?
Yeah, well, that's news to me. It sounds shit, but it went up.
I think what is resounding is a lot what we talked about actually came to fruition, but we weren't sure exactly how Game 5 was going to go. And the emotional toll of the Game 3 win definitely came into effect for Game 4. And then what we saw was from Game 2, 3, 4 and 5 were probably some of the best games that we're going to see in an NBL Finals series. The closeness of each game that like came down to every possession. And the only thing that I wanted to say, besides congratulations to Tassie, to Scott Roth, to Jack McVay on the MVP, and how great this is for our competition that Tassie has won a championship in the first 3 years, but can anyone make a fucking inbound pass and not turn it over?
Three games in a row, wow, yep.
Yeah.
Let's do the coaching part. Do the coaching part first.
Please.
Don't throw it to the corners, throw it to your big. If your first two looks aren't open, have a guard screen away for your big, run him at the ball and throw it high in the air where no one can reach it. So that's all I've got to say about that. Well, ironically, of all the things I did today, we've got some events coming up at the pub. Shout out to Stabe. We built a stage. Well, he built a stage. I watched him drink beer next to him. But we were drawing up some of the basic sideline plays that we've run over the years, and it's a different thing drawing up a sideline play to get a score as to what it is drawing up a sideline play just to get it in, to catch it knowing you're going to be fouled. And, the Tassie one was a little bit different because they needed to score, but, you know, sometimes you just got to get it in. Go back. It's simple, right? Congratulations to Tassie, what they've done, what they've demonstrated. And I'll tell you, it's been a few days, and I don't particularly want to pick the games apart on this podcast. Other podcasts do that better than us, but we watch them all. But the legacy piece for me, and the thing that perhaps outside of winning the championship that I thought was really, really special is, and I don't even know if you've seen these images or videos yet, but the welcoming party that the Jack Jumpers had when they arrived back, 7,000 people at their home floor. It was akin to an AFL grand final back at the home training centre. It was unreal. I couldn't see any other team in this league having that kind of reception for a champion. So we compliment the front court. We compliment Scott Roth. We compliment all of the players, Jack McVay, Sean McDonald, Milt Doyle, all of the guys. I think you got to compliment the back office as well and what they've been able to do in engaging the community. It was just unreal. So it's historic. I watched the game. I think everybody – it was funny when I was at Game 3, you know, Darren Smith, you know, who's – I think he's a CEO now, but other people that I've known – were turning up with their Tasmania jerseys on and they're having a go at me. We're going to get you. What do you think? You're nervous? I'm like, you're assuming I'm barracking for United. I said, the Jack Jumpers didn't fire me. So I was going to be happy whoever won for a number of people. and disappointed with whoever lost for a number of people. But look, it was historic. I thought, on top of everything else, I thought the way United handled it in defeat was really, really professional too, for what it's worth.
I was fortunate enough to catch up with Darren and Mika Vekona as well, an ex-teammate of mine, when they were playing the Perth series beforehand. And seeing those two people, Mika especially, an ex-teammate, a championship-winning teammate, Darren, who I've been around for a long time, as you've been around for a long time, and being able to have a chat with them pre-game one, pre-game three, and just see. I've seen a lot of people in management before, and I've seen people that are just going through it and writing, doing their job, but those two were so emotionally invested to this club and organization and what they were doing, and it was almost refreshing to a point where I was like, yeah. And you know what, if I'm calling a spade, Nick Trulson does a fantastic job of wearing his emotion on his sleeve for Melbourne United as well.
And I agree. Hey,
I think you summed it up really well. The one person I was really upset for was Brad Newley, and I think this has to be mentioned. The 20 years of playing, another one who's been a teammate of ours with the national team, been around, done everything you could possibly do except for winning a championship, and to become that close in his last season. Obviously, I feel for Newell's, I feel for his family, but what an absolute unbelievable career that he's had and the longevity of his career. So congratulations to Newell's as well. And I won't say all the best in retirement, because it's not retirement. He just changes
your career.
Spot on. And whatever he does next, I hope he's very successful in.
I want to pick you up, and I agree 100%. And the thing I love about conversations like this, I look forward to telling him that in person, not here publicly. I want to dig in. You mentioned briefly, and a person that nobody has spoken about in this whole Jack Jumpers thing. You've just mentioned him, your old teammate, Mika Vekona. I reckon I was with you I haven't spent much time with Mika at all over the years. And I finally got a night, and I reckon you were there in New Zealand when we were together, and we just chatted, and he fascinated me. So just, you said pull a curtain back a little bit before, pull a curtain back on Mika Vekona a little bit, and what he's like we all know what he's like as a player on the court, but in the locker room, transitioning into coaching, but the type of impact you feel, or perhaps you know, that he's had on the Jack Jumpers and their success, because he hasn't said a word publicly.
Yeah, I think the one thing that fascinates me about Mika is he's one of those guys that doesn't have to say a word to command respect, especially in basketball. And he was a teammate that you could always rely on without doing anything fancy. He was essentially what we associate in the NBL with Damian Martin. Mika Vekona was every part of that as well. And while people didn't always, and fans seem to love Damian Martin, no matter what team you supported, there is not a fan that I knew that didn't want a Mika Vekona type or a Mika Vekona himself on their team because of what he brought to the table. Him as a person, I couldn't speak highly enough. There's not enough words that I could describe Mika Vekona as. I've spoken briefly about top teammates. Mika Vekona sits very within that top three, always has, and we've only played one season together. He didn't bitch or complain about anything while a player. He'd always just do what was asked, never second-guessed or questioned a coach's intelligence, and found a way to evolve his game from where he started in the NBL to where he finished as one of the most successful players that we've had in our league, and now it's translated into off-court for Tasmania. And there's a reason that they put him within as a special advisor to start off with, is because the guy knows nothing more than how to win, not just in basketball, but in life in general. Beautiful wife in Vanessa and the family that he has. I couldn't be happier for a dude. And then when you see him, and it can be 6 months, 5 years, 10 years, mate, that big smile that comes across his face, his massive mitts of a hand, and when you squeeze it, you know that is one strong fucking dude that you're dealing with. But on the outside, he's one of the most gentlest souls you'll ever meet. And I couldn't be, if you would ask me who I was the happiest for out of Tasmania, he was the dude I was most happiest for, because success follows this man everywhere.
Well said, mate. Hey, let's keep moving. Let's stay on the NBL for a minute. And you know what? I kind of hate doing this, but we will, because you find a lot of media outlets will talk about what's next before we celebrate what's happened. And, you know, we've just seen something historic. It feels almost wrong to move on so quickly, but we'll make sure we continue to celebrate Tasmania over the coming months as well, and we won't just forget about that. But probably the thing that was a little bit jarring for me over the last few days were the comments made by Justin Schuler about Nathan Sobey and the reason for his release from the final year of his contract. For those of you who haven't heard, Shula mentioned that, and I'm paraphrasing significantly here, that Sobey wanted too much money and they could get better value for that dollar. They wanted people who were winners in the program, you know, alluding to the fact that Sobey wasn't. And culture was most important, and that's why they were releasing Sobey. Now, tell me if I'm out of line, that's very brief. But I would expect that's how most people would have taken the comments. Your thoughts on the comments, then? I just didn't think they needed to be made.
Yeah. I mean, I sent you the clip of what he'd said on SCNQ Queensland when he made it. And whether you believe that or not as a coach, I don't think you can say it publicly. You can just say, you know, Nathan came to us. We understand where he's at and his desire to go to Southeast Melbourne or whatever it may be. I think you have to downplay it in the media. For him to come out and say, basically, yes, he just won our MVP, but we want people within our organisation that has better habits and the habits that we want. It's a pretty strong statement to not only Nathan Sobey, but to the entire basketball community. I don't necessarily agree with saying it publicly like that. I don't necessarily disagree with what he actually said. And I think the biggest knock on Sobey has always been his attitude and the way that he goes about his business. I don't think anyone can argue that he's not a great basketball player, and he's not, I mean, he won a bronze medal with the Boomers, so no one's doubting his basketball potential. But the knock on him has always been his attitude and the way he goes about his business. And I don't disagree with Brisbane releasing him. I just disagree with the way that he's come across in the media and what he said.
The thing that I really found interesting was numerous times Justin Schuler mentioned we need people to fit our culture. He mentioned culture a number of times, right? Culture, right in front of the microphone. Good. Let me go back just in case we end up cutting this part up. Justin Schuler mentioned culture a number of times. I want to be really clear with this. Culture starts at the top. How you treat people on the way out the door should be the same as how you invite them into the door. That's culture. So if you're going to go on camera or radio and talk about culture and throw the knives into someone on the way out the door, that's fucking bullshit culture. So if he's talking about culture and that's the example, the bullets are no chance. I've told this story very few times, or these stories very few times. Justin Shuler is the only coach that I've ever had players come to me and say, we're ready to quit because Justin Shuler said I'd never make it. And some of these players have gone on to make it. That's not culture. Culture's empowering. Culture is finding capabilities in a group and individuals. And I didn't, you know, the record will say I didn't do many things right in my time as head coach of the Melbourne Tigers and United, but one of the things I was massive on, and I'd be interested if you ever spoke to any players, is I really wanted to do the right thing by them on their way out the door. I wanted to treat them with the exact same level of respect as I did on the, as I recruited them. So for me, for those reasons particularly, I don't see how they've got a chance. If your culture's throwing knives into people on the way out the door and that's who you want in your club, go fuck yourself. I don't want to play for Brisbane right now.
I think you said it all. And just out of curiosity, the move to Southeast Melbourne for Sobey, A, how do you see that for the Phoenix? Obviously, this is a very Adelaide 36ers-centric Joey Wright with Creek and Sobes together again. How do you see that moving forward for Mike Kelly and for Sam McKinnon as the assistant coach?
I think it's completely the Phoenix needed. It's shifting the conversation. I think it's a Phoenix conversation more than it clearly. They needed more high level, highly skilled Aussies before they even start their import search. I think in Sobey, and I've thought this for a long time, that I don't believe Sobey's a point guard. I believe his best value is to play him off the ball and in the open court as a ball handler, not in the half court as a ball handler. So my hope is that Phoenix bring in an import point guard who can run the show with the ability to score. Putting Creek and Sobey together is formidable. Athleticism, strength, speed in the open court. I still think Phoenix will watch this space. They've got, you know, I think Angus Glover ends up there. I know he's on our run sheet to speak about as well. He's been released by the Sydney Kings, but you get a sense of what the Phoenix are trying to do by bringing in talented Aussies, physical Aussies who can compete and defend multiple positions. So if that all becomes true and these are the Phoenix's first couple of moves, I think they're fantastic moves. Let's see. They've got some catching up to do. How do you see it?
I'm interested. Like, I've always been one that has been very big on you've got to have the right Australian talent and the imports just complement, like the better teams, the imports complement the Australian talent that helps you out. And for me, obviously, that is two of the better Australian talents that you've got in the league, so it is nice. What I would say about the American talent, though, is that they will need a lot of defense. Rim protection. I'm thinking a Derek Pardon type center. I think they need almost like a Scott Machado type point guard that is a very good facilitator that can score when required. And then it gives you a flexibility of a really good wing player that sort of fills that role, whether that is, you know, a... Well, I won't even say, but they just need a good good stretch wing shooter that, that can play defense, almost a 3-and-D
type, like a DJ Hogue, Casey Prather type import.
Correct. I had Casey Prather there, but obviously we didn't see the Casey Prather of old when he came back to Brisbane, but that is exactly the type of person that they want. This is not on the run sheet, This is without notice, but Peter Jackson Cartwright has re-signed with the New Zealand Breakers, and I can't help but think that Will McDowell White is moving back to an Australian-based team. One of the free agents and a backup point guard that I can see going to New Zealand is Mitch McCarron. Any thoughts on Macca becoming a Breaker? And I would assume that there is multiple teams going after him, but I think this re-signing of Jackson Cartwright is a signal to Will McDowell White that if he wants to be the number one guy, he's got to go somewhere else, a la a Perth Wildcats, which is where he almost got to last off-season.
Possibly. I think it's a really significant signing. And I was going through my phone. Remind me the Tasmanian point guard. He had 20-something at halftime in the championship series in game five. What's his name? The Jack Jumpers little point guard.
Crawford.
Right. So you see the size thing, and I think Jackson Cartwright and Crawford are the two. You don't get penalised for being small in this league.
Yes, except if your name was Zach Delaney, then you became a punchline, unfortunately.
Yeah, but you need ability. So for those two who have ability, you're still able to get to your spots. You're still rewarded for getting in the lane. The ability, you know, we pick up defensively in the full court as much as any league in the world, and that's a benefit when you're that small. So to bring him back in some of the games that Jackson Cartwright played were fantastic. With regard to Mitch, I probably mentioned this to you off air. I reckon I've spoken 5 words to Mitch in my life. I'm really hoping that when I get over there to New Zealand, I get some time. And I want to buy him a meal. I'd love to buy him a beer after the game. I'd love to sit down and just get to know him a little bit, because I don't know him at all. And, you know, even in watching the two games of the Breakers, you see how unselfish he is. So I said the Breakers, the two games of the Airs in New Zealand, you see how unselfish he is. But at the same time, I'm still sitting there thinking, you giving up some of the shots you're giving up, or you know, the best option is for you to become an aggressive scorer and to pick and choose your times. I'm fascinated to see how he sees the game, and that's what I hope he's able to re-establish playing for the Airs, is that ability to pick his times. I'd love to see him as a 12 to 15 shot a game guy, not a 6 to 8. And I think he can do that any league. I play with David Stiff, and I thought Stiffy's one of the most professional guys that I've ever played with, but Stiffy would have the exact same statistics in an NBL championship game 5 as he would in a men's A-grade game at MSAC on a Monday night. He just plays the same way no matter what the level. And I think at some level that's Macca. Is it? I'd love to see him step up his game in the New Zealand National Basketball League, because I'm very confident that he can still be a really, really productive offensive and defensive guy here in the Australian NBL as well. So I'm not sure where he ends up, but he'll end up somewhere.
On a personal level, I want to give a quick shout out to Macca, who's going into the Metro State Hall of Fame this month, as well as Luke Kendall and myself. It's pretty cool that three Aussies.
Hang on, did you just give yourself a shout out?
No, There's more to Macca and Kendall, but us three are going into the Metro State Hall of Fame.
Let me take this over. For you three to go to a collegiate basketball program that wasn't on the map at all, you weren't the first Aussies. Remind me the first Aussie to go, were they?
Well, there was Kane Oakley, there was Lee Barlow, there was...
I'm thinking Lee Barlow, but Kane Oakley went as well. But for you guys to grab the reins and run with it and become national champions, to do what you did in that, you know, for Metro State, for collegiate basketball in Denver, and I think the underrated part, and you all played with Mike Dunlap. I'm not sure if Macca was with Mike, but I think he was. It almost proved to young Australian basketball players back here who aspired to be pros that you didn't need to go the way that everyone thought you did by playing in a shitty Division One team and getting no minutes and getting blown out every game, that being the best Division II college and players in the best college in the country is an exceptionally difficult thing to do. And no, look, I'm really, really close with you and Kendall, of course, and like I said, with Mitch, not so much yet. But for you three, congratulations. It's, you know, the impact that college and you guys specifically when you're over there, and I'll include Mike Dunlap in that, have left on Australian basketball and will continue to over the years has been incredible. So, you know, for us, we knew about it. You know, the first I knew about it was McCarron asked if he signed, would he be able to take the game off to fly across to Denver to go to the Hall of Fame night? I'm like, of course you can't, mate, shit. I'm rapt that Kendall gets to go as well. I know that you'll be represented over there, mate, but congratulations to the three of its incredible achievement.
I think for college, I mean, everyone spoke about St. Mary's being the pipeline, but the pipeline before the pipeline was Metro State, and whether that was myself, Luke Kendall, but then it became Mitch McCarron, it became Nick Kay, it became Jesse Wagstaff, it was Sunday Desh. There's so many Aussies that went through that program, and to be able to represent Metro State and still seeing the pipeline, well, still seeing the guys playing in the league, I think is pretty cool. Hey, the NBL also made an announcement today that Kenny Smith is now the head of Nexstar's Player Initiatives of North America. Now, I think two thoughts before I get to this is, A, there was also the G League Unite is no longer after this season, which is, I think, a feather in the cap to what the Nexstar's program has become here in Australia. But B, is this a good fit, or is this a publicity stunt? Also citing that he would be part of the ownership of the new NBL expansion team, which is pending as well. So this is a twofold question. Let's start with Kenny Smith first and your thoughts around it. I will just say that I think it is a bit of a publicity stunt, and him identifying talent, I don't think has anything to do with it, because I think our eyes are pretty good in what we've been able to bring.
Anything Larry does is a publicity stunt. And Kenny Anderson.
Kenny Smith.
Oh, geez, well done, Chris. Kenny Smith, he's not a scout. He doesn't watch all of the college games. He's an NBA guy. He's got a profile. He's not going to identify talent. He might be able to recruit it, and maybe that would be a more appropriate title. But if you're looking and when they announced the role, I thought, yeah, I get that, because the Nexstar's program is doing very well. And love Liam Santa Maria, but he doesn't live in the United States and he can't watch all of the collegiate programs from here, all the collegiate players from here in Australia, nor does he have the years and years of relationships with the key people yet. I just look in our own backyard, Sam Vecenie. He's the best evaluator of college talent I've known, and he's sitting in our backyard. I would have employed him ahead of Kenny Smith. I would have employed a number of people without a profile who have genuine relationships with college players and agents before I recruited Kenny Smith. So what's my answer? Yeah, it's publicity. He might be able to recruit them and give a level of credibility to the program, but I think it's already got that because of the results it's produced. But maybe it needed the role, but I don't think Kenny Smith's the right one once you take the publicity away from it.
Yeah, you say Sam Vecenie. I'm going to say the guy that probably created the next stars, not...
Joey Wright.
No.
Oh, Daniel Malden. Yeah, sure.
He's living over there. He's got, obviously, you've got an eye for talent, and I thought he would have been very good in the role. But hey, but it leads to the next question is, he's going to be a part owner of the expansion team. Obviously, Gold Coast has been spoken about. Darwin has been spoken about. If you were in charge of the NBL, where would you put an NBL expansion team?
Firstly, it's a Gold Coast.
Are you saying the Gold Coast will be the new expansion team? Is that what
yes.
you're saying?
Yeah, that's done. It's an interesting business model. I won't get into it, but I saw it. I've seen the proposal, and you'd want to have money to burn, but. My biggest thing is, cheers again. My biggest thing remains sustainability. Instead of the need to aggressively expand, there's a really, really important need to create sustainability with all of the teams that we've got. Every single team we have in the league now needs to be around when my 9-year-old son Hunter's 39. That's how this is going to succeed. Expansion, does it need it? I mean, we've only got, 25, 30 million people now. We don't have an incredible TV deal. It's hard to get TV trucks and TV cameras to regional locations. So it has to be a major city. Sydney's got one. It doesn't need two because it's not a basketball town. Melbourne's got two. There doesn't need to be another team in New Zealand yet. Perth's not big enough for two. Adelaide's not big enough for two. Gold Coast is probably the right answer, but it hasn't worked in the past. So my question is, how does it work now? Because there aren't the multinational companies to support the sport to the level that it needs to be supported to justify the investment that the owners are going to make. They need some very, very rich owners to come in who, if they're going to pay, throw a number, $25 million into this, it can't be their last $25 million. They've got to be prepared to wear it for a little while Larry continues to own a percentage of the club and build it. But my fear in expansion becomes when Larry walks away, and the league is sold or passed on. Do we believe? Yeah, Melbourne United have sold a significant portion of the club in very recent times and at an inflated price for many people. As high a number as we value these teams at, that doesn't make them profitable. It just makes them expensive. It's like a car. Like an extraordinarily high-end race car. It doesn't make them profitable, it just makes them expensive. My answer, my very, very long answer to your very short question was, I'm not sure we need expansion yet. I think we need Tasmania to be in 5-6 years. We need everyone to establish themselves and be profitable before we even look at it.
Do you think there is a equalisation problem in the NBL?
Problem? No. Europe have shown it for years. There are high salary cap teams, and there are teams who can't afford to pay that. They're smaller markets. The equalisation I don't see as a problem. There are always going to be some big dogs and some underdogs.
How about up dog?
What's up dog? it's probably one we should spend a little bit more time considering our opinion before we chat about it on air, but it's going to be the Gold Coast. It's going to be overpriced. I hope it's successful. I hope every team in it, and I'll start with Illawarra, is sustainably successful, because there's an undercurrent there that doesn't quite have as much money behind it as what it should need. Like I say, I hope that my kids are following the same two teams in Melbourne in 20 years' time than what they are. Did I say my two kids?
Yep.
Yeah, I got three. I meant to say Hunter. So I hope Hunter's following the same teams in 20-something years. Ethan doesn't give a shit, so...
I was about to say, Ethan doesn't care. It would be Izzy and Hunter.
Ethan wouldn't know there's a basketball team in Melbourne. He wouldn't know the playoffs. So he'd just tell you what the movies are at Hoyts. It's fantastic.
That's awesome. I worry about the Gold Coast, having played there. And I worry.
Why?
I think my concerns and my worries are different to what is currently there. The Gold Coast is a very different beast to the Gold Coast that I lived in back in the day. And two, there was a lot of national competitions fighting for the same territory at the same time. We saw the Gold Coast Titans, obviously, is the big dog in town when it comes to Gold Coast and what they've been able to do. But you had the Blaze there, you had the soccer team at the time with the National Soccer League there as well. And there was one other, and I can't even... And then obviously the Gold Coast Suns as well. And the Gold Coast Suns was brand new at the time, and they were getting a lot of money pumped into them from the AFL, and probably still do have a fair bit of money pumped into them from the AFL. So I think your money... answer probably holds all the keys, because they do need a lot of money to A, invest, B, build, and then three, be sustainable over a long period of time before they get success. And be interesting. I mean, how close are we to getting a Phil Handy again that we thought was in with a chance to get the Tasmania job before Scott Roth, but getting that sort of caliber sort of coach to get in the team. And I'm sure that's why Kenny Smith has been brought in, is to help with the recruiting of a big-time coach, because we seem to not worry about Australian coaches anymore, and it's what's happening overseas and who can we bring in. So... anyway, we'll leave that there. We've already touched on Angus Glover being released by the Kings. I think that's a shame, because he was a cult hero for their last championship that they won. Moving on, but we think that he will land at the Phoenix as well. Let's move over to the NBA. Josh Giddey is in the midst of a hell of a run. The first player in NBA history to have three triple-doubles playing at Madison Square Garden. I love it. Yeah, had a career high the other night as well. It's good to see Josh, and I'll say this from a Boomer's point of view, not only Josh's success, but Paddy having renewed vigour, coming, playing for the Heat and getting minutes, and meaningful minutes. This is all good stuff for the Boomers, but let's stick on Josh right now. How have you seen his last month of basketball?
I've seen it as him being able to play with a bit more clear air than what he's had all season long. And you always talk about tricky times, and you know, the whole corporate term or sporting term of overcoming adversity. It's one of those things you write on a board. No one's got any fucking idea what it means. It's very rarely got to do with anything that happens on a basketball court. And it's even to some extent has very little to do with injury. But what Josh had to go through off the court, and as that's starting to get into his rear view mirror a little bit, I just reckon he's been able to finally concentrate on being a basketball player again and the type of basketball player we know that he is. Shea's been injured a little bit over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I think Josh has been fantastic. He's finding form at the right time of year. OKC sit one game off the top of the West. They'll clearly be one of the top three teams. They'll have home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. A lot of commentary. We fully expect anyone who plays OKC to just put their five men on Josh and dare him to shoot. It's been pleasing to see Josh have the courage to start loading up and shooting those threes. He's making a few. His length still allows him to get on the rim. But as much as anything, it's nice to see his minutes start creeping up from, for a while he was 12 to 18 minutes a game. He's back up in the high 20s again. So, no, rap for the kid, playing great basketball. He's the best player we've got in Australian basketball right now, and really, really interested to see not so much the next 6 games before playoffs, but how he performs when the Western Conference finals roll around.
You want to talk about the Dallas Mavericks? I'm just having a quick look now.
I want to talk to you because I wrote these notes, right?
Yeah.
And for those listening, yes, we wrote a couple of notes. What I thought I'd do, I'll keep just backing back up to it because you hitched your wagon on the Mavs being a bit overrated.
Yep.
Although we're both Mavs fans, so I'll put that caveat. But I was trying to think of the two teams who potentially could cause some real problems that we're really not talking about as a contender. Mm-hmm. And in the West, it just occurred to me it could very well be the Mavs. Is that Alice singing in the background? What's going on here? That's a beautiful singing voice in the background.
Yeah, it's more crying than anything. But
crying. Yeah, okay. Yeah. We'll let it cry then. I was going to say we'll listen to it, we'll sing, but not cry. I just reckon Luke has been fantastic. It still surprises me that when you do a straw poll of 100 people for MVP, he gets one first place vote. When he's the league leading scorer by 3 points a game, he's second in the league in assists. He's over 9 rebounds a game. I just reckon he's been exceptional. And the fact that we haven't heard from Kyrie Irving in months probably indicates he's in a good place. He's playing good basketball, and yep, he has been playing good basketball. So I just reckon they've shown more of a willingness to defend. I think they've got their starting lineup right. They've got their rotations right. They could end up fourth or fifth. Yeah, I think they'll end up in one of those two spots. But the reason I wrote the Mavs down is I just reckon on any given night or in any given series, more the point, they could upset anyone in the West, maybe outside the Nuggets.
Yeah, I just had a quick look. I don't think they get fourth. Given that the Clippers beat Denver today, I think that hurts their chances of finishing fourth. So more than likely, they're going to finish fifth. Now,
do you think they beat the Clippers?
That's part of the...
I'm fascinated in the crying in the background. This is fantastic.
I am not fascinated.
This podcast could go for 2.5 hours until the crying stops.
It might. If they had got fourth, I would have loved them against the Minnesota Timberwolves and would have backed them to easily beat the Timberwolves. But the fact that they finished fifth, you're looking at a New Orleans, Golden State, and they beat either one of those ones currently quite easily.
Hang on. Fourth place, fifth. So they play the Clippers in the first round.
Because fifth plays eighth, which means the...
First place eighth. Fourth place fifth, no matter what. First place eighth, second, seventh.
Sorry, third, sixth. I'm thinking. Don't worry. Would they beat the Clippers? Yeah, I'd back them to beat the Clippers.
And then if Minnesota end up first, the Mavs cross over against Minnesota if they get through.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, it kind of opens up for them. Now I'm expecting Denver to finish first. And they hit Denver, and I think they're still the favorite in the West. But the Mavs have just been a really interesting watch the last month.
Yeah. Well, let's call a spade though. They're not coming out of the West, and I don't think they get past even if it was Denver, OKC, either one of them. I don't think they beat either one of those ones.
I will continue to say
that I'm not a fan of Minnesota, and I don't think they'll win.
No, I agree, and I think that it's a really interesting dynamic in Minnesota where you've got your best players, the young guy, and you've got a bunch of veterans around. The off-court dynamic fascinates me, especially with the new ownership coming in. But in the East, we've seen Joel Embiid come back the last two games, and all of a sudden, especially if the 76ers can get out of a play-in game and finish sixth, and perhaps come up against Milwaukee or Cleveland, New York, they're the team in the East that nobody's spoken about in a few weeks, or probably in a few months, to be honest. But Embiid's come back looking in good touch, in reasonably good shape, and now he's got 2 weeks to get himself ready for a playoff run.
If you were to tell me what my three top picks for the East Coast was, it would not have the Boston Celtics in it. It would not have the Milwaukee Bucks in it. It would not
have top three. Hang on, your top three would not have the Boston Celtics in it?
No. I don't think they're going to come out of the East now. I've seen enough. I think if you were to ask me who my top three are.
Closing? Are you talking about? Yep.
Is the New York Knicks.
Julius Randle's been ruled out for the entire postseason.
Yep.
Probably good.
The Knicks.
Okay.
Miami and Philly. They're my three top teams in the East that I like.
How can you possibly justify Miami getting out of the East?
Justify it last year?
No, but 100-1 horses don't win twice in a row.
Alice is crying right now because of you, Chris.
I kind of want to bring her in. Let's ask her what her problem is.
There's just something about Boston, and I would say, what is my reason with Boston? It's more Joe Mazzulla than anything else as a coach.
I think he's been good this year.
I think he's been good when they're winning, and I think when the pressure's on, he could coach really well for 46 minutes, and his last 2 minutes of coaching can be really, really bad. I don't think it's tight in crunch time that he is a very good crunch time coach. And what does playoffs come down to? Comes down to a lot of little moments in the last 5 minutes of a game, and I'm not convinced that he is a good coach yet. He's better than Doc Rivers. I'll point that out.
Doc Rivers is 500 and yeah, go. Well, okay. Hey, you might have to go at some stage soon, but I'll keep here as long as I can. Now, I don't know if you've had a chance. And I got asked by a couple of people over the last week, we're going to start ramping up Boomers conversations.
Yep.
And they asked about a possible team. I'm not going to pick a team yet, but we put together some sort of depth chart. I want to preface this by saying I think success at these Olympic Games needs to be tempered in the expectation of the Australian basketball public. We've got an extraordinarily tough pool.
We've said this before, with an aging roster,
to get out of that first round will be a success. It's going to be tough. Yep. So you might be looking at the same list that I'm looking at. So I'm looking at our depth chart in the point guard position. I've got Patty Mills as a two. in the stage of his career that he is now. I don't see him as a point guard. I see his best position as playing off the ball in the two as a scorer. Mm-hmm. Josh Giddey, I've actually got Matthew Dellavedova as our second best point guard to go to the Olympics right now.
Yep.
Will McDowell, White, and Tyrese Proctor.
Yep.
Who have I missed?
You haven't missed anyone.
Because I think that they're going to pick Mills. Of course, they're going to pick Patty Mills. And they'll put him into that third point guard position. I don't think Will McDowell White's any chance to go. And he's never been spoken about. But I'll tell you what, I'd be taking him to camp if he's fit.
So I think Giddey is obviously our number one. And I think Patty is definitely our number shooting guard in that.
We'll get to the two guard in a second.
I would argue that Dante Exum is our backup point guard. And
you think he's a point guard?
I think he has been our point guard, and I think he will continue to be our point guard as a backup in what he does. And I think Dyson, this is one of the issues with the Boomers currently, is we don't have shooting guards. If you look at it, Giddey is a point guard. Exum is a point guard. Dyson Daniels is a point guard. Matthew Dellavedova is a point guard. Will McDowell White is a point guard. Tyrese Proctor is a point guard. And then it really leaves us with Patty Mills and Chris Golding as true shooting guards. So I would argue that we're going to go Giddey in the starting, Exum as the the backup, Dyson Daniels as our backup point guard, because we always seem to take a backup point guard with
which we should.
Yeah. And then after Patty, we just go bigger. And if you were to throw one of those guys into the two guard mix, and instead of a backup, I would argue that you would take Will McDowell White over Deli.
Yeah, right. We'll keep moving forward. The three spot's really interesting because the Ingles experiment in the four spot last Olympics with injuries didn't work. He's not a four. Josh Green and Matisse Thybulle are, for all intents and purposes, the exact same player.
Yep.
So you've got that in the three, and then you've got Joe. The players you've just mentioned, you know, Dante Exum, Dyson Daniels, as much as they can swing to the one, they can swing to the three. And at least, you know, Dante's got the length and the shooting ability to run a wing, whichever position that is. But again, you look at it, an outside of Joe, and Joe's not somebody who's going to go and create his own shot now. He's going to have to be wide open, right? Outside of Josh Giddey and Patty Mills, we don't have anyone that can create their own shot internationally from the perimeter so far, which is a problem. It sounds like you've got real bad family issues here, were they? So we haven't picked anyone yet, but I mean, so let's look at the backcourt and we'll call that 1, 2, 3.
Wait, before you move on from that point.
Yeah.
The bonus is that we do have Josh Giddey at the point guard spot, which creates a lot for teammates.
Well, you think who can shoot?
Who can shoot?
But if you've got wings who aren't a perimeter threat, Josh Giddey becomes less effective because you've got feet in the paint in the FIBA game.
Okay, so from what you've said, so the ones, Giddey, Deli, Will McDowell, White, Proctor. Two, Mills, Exum, Daniels, Goulding. Three, Green, Thybulle, Ingles. If you were to say, who are the absolute locks for me? It is Josh Giddey. It's Patty Mills. It's Dante Exum. It's Dyson Daniels. It's Green and it's Ingles. They are the absolute locks. And I know there's been some slander on Joe and is it past him, and Gorge has not said that he's a definite to go. You know what? He's a definite to be able to shoot the three if he's wide open. So
and willing. The thing that surprised me in Tokyo was his unwillingness to shoot the three when he was opening. Do you remember watching how many he turned down?
Yep.
Back in Tokyo, I think that there's got to be a willingness, but I agree. Mm-hmm. So I agree. Giddy, Mills, Exum, Daniels. Did you say Green, Thibel, and Ingles?
I haven't added Thibel yet.
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, including Giddy. You've probably got one out of those remaining to go. All right. Yep. So if you've got 7 backcourt players and 5 frontcourt players, which we think is the way they're going to go, let me just reel them off by depth chart. Nick Kay, Duop, Reef, and you could probably flip those 2, 1 and 2 in the 4 spot.
Yep.
Xavier Cooks, Jack White, Brock Modem, Luke Travers. In the 5, you've got Jock Landale, Will Magnay, Sam Froling, Rocco Zakarski, who, if you're looking for someone you don't genuinely think medals are realistic option, he's someone you might want to bring along. I'm sure they won't. Then you've got Pinder and Thon Maker, who for all a no chance. So Nick Kay's a lock, Duop Reef's a lock, Jock Landale's a lock. There's 3. You've got 2 more out of Cooks, White, Modem, Travers, Froling, Zakarski, Pinder and Maker.
I think Xavier Cooks goes. I think that Will Magnay goes.
So what you've done, and you know what, I agree, and you heard my thing a couple of weeks ago where I think Will Magnay should go. But, geez, you've got a lot of guys who can't shoot the basketball on that team.
You do. I don't think Modem goes. I don't think Travers goes. I don't think Zakarski goes. I don't think Pinder goes. I don't think Maker goes. I think it comes down to,
I agree,
do you take Froling or do you take White? And I think they will lean towards White more than Froling, because you can swing Duop Reef into the 5 spot as a stretch 5 versus, the other way around.
I think you're right, and it's funny. We'll pick a team another time close to the Olympics once we've seen it. But
I'd like to put for the record, I'd love Furphy to be on this list as well, because I think he's got a real opportunity in the future to be a boomer as well.
Who?
John Furphy, who plays for Kansas this year, had a stellar rookie season for Kansas, and I will always remember Tommy Shepard going, "Who's this Furphy kid?" about 12 months ago. And I must admit, I said, "I don't really know." And he goes, "This kid is going to be special. He's going to be more than just a bit player in the NBA in the future." So
I agree. It's funny because you talk about Olympic cycles and players who should get a chance. And by the way, congratulations to George Raymore for getting in our first ever Opal squad, which was incredible and committed to Kentucky.
That has been pressure. That's all that was.
But sometimes someone like Furphy comes through and it's just the absolute wrong time for an Olympics, because I don't think they're going to put him in this year. And
no. The old guy's going to... The way that we put Proctor in this conversation, I think we should put Furphy in the conversation as well.
You're probably right. And you mentioned the NBA evaluation. It was interesting. Again, when I get put on the spot, I forget names. Sidney King's NBA prospect in a lot of people's minds this year.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Who are we talking about?
That is...
you're better at this than me. Yeah, but while you're thinking about his name, I'll tell you the story. I sat with 3 NBA scouts, I won't tell you from what teams, in a game in Melbourne, and he was on a lot of people's very extended list, certainly not a short list. And it's funny how our media will talk people up as being
Alex
NBA
Tui.
Alex Tui. Of being NBA ready, and I sat next to him and I said, "What do you think about Tui?" I said, "I just need to see him in person to see if he's as slow as what we think he is." And he ran 3 steps and he said, "Yep, he's as slow as what we think he is." So that's a part, and that's the transition between the NBL and the NBA when you are a guard. You need that explosiveness, that light-footedness, that ability to impact through the floor and impact the game physically and not be heavy-footed. So it's really interesting hearing teams who had picks late in the first round and into the second sort of put a line through Alex Tui when we all thought that he might have been an NBA prospect. Just while we're speaking about boomers.
I reckon we'll leave it there. I think it's been a good session.
You need to go and get some family time. But before we go, I'm gonna lean up. I've thought it really interesting as I put my camera down. I've got a little Fam Jam shirt with me and Izzy, and you've got an Andrew Parkinson shirt on. So I just thought it was a really, really good week of dress sense for us. Hey everyone, thanks for listening. We'll be back to recap a lot more of the NBA as we turn into playoffs. Werther's going to go and win Father and Stepfather of the Year award for the however many year in a row consecutively. Rate us, give us a review, as many as you can. We all love that stuff. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, everyone.
Knock, knock.